Morning. Today's daf in Nida is Tes Zayin. We are in Tes Zayin Amud Aleph. We're on the top of the Amud Ba Minei, May Rav Nachman. Today's daf is going to be divided to the Amud Aleph Amud Beis. Amud Aleph is going to be talking about Vestos from a very, very fundamental level. And the Amud Beis, we go back to the discussion of Bedika, and we will go into more machlokas between Beishamah and Beis Hillel regarding Bedika. Let's start with the Amud Aleph. Amud Aleph is going to open up with a very basic question, very fundamental question. I'm just going to read the question inside, and then we'll just discuss the issue from a larger perspective. Bominei, Rav Nachman, the following question was asked from Rav Nachman, Vestos Daraisa Darabanan. This idea of Vestos, is it a Din Daraisa or is it a Din Darabanan? Okay. The question now has been posed. Let's explain. As we discussed since the beginning of the Masechta, a woman, once she starts actually menstruating, so she is now a Nida, she will be Tamea, and we went over from the beginning of the Masechta for the last 2 weeks, the basic structure of what happens when a woman becomes a Nida. Over here we're talking about the expectation of her becoming a Nida. There are two types of Vestos, there are two types of cycles. The word Vesta over here in this context is understood as a cycle. And when it comes to a woman having a cycle, so we can break it down into organizationally two different types of cycles. There's what's called a vest kavua and a vest shena kavua. A vest kavua is a fixed cycle. It means to say that the woman knows with pretty good precision exactly when to expect her next menstrual cycle. She's on the clock. She really is in touch with her biological clock. Her rhythm is such where she knows not only to the day, but probably knows within the hour of which particular day it is that she's going to expect it to come. It could be tied to the month. It could be that the same day of the of every month. I say month over here, I mean lunar month. Or it could be that the interval between one and the other is going to be at a constant. So this is what's called a vest kavua. Nowadays, I don't have the statistics in front of me. So right now I'm not giving you actual statistics, but what I'm saying is probably right. Nowadays, the majority of our women do not operate with this kind of precision. Obviously, they have a cycle. Obviously, it operates on a monthly basis, but not with this kind of precision that we're describing right now. Right? It fluctuates day, 2 days, but nothing like what the Gemara here is describing. This is what's called a woman who has a vest kavua. Then there's a woman who has a vest she'ena kavua. So it's not fixed. You remember at the end of the first perek, so we described that for her it's going to be a little bit tricky because for such a woman who does not know when the cycle is going to come, so she's going to be with her husband, but she does not have any kind of certainty in terms of when her next menstrual cycle is going to go, so it becomes a little bit more challenging. And so that was what we described at the end of the first parak. Daf Yud Beis, the last daf of the first parak, discusses Isha She'in La Veskavu. She does not have a fixed cycle. For the purpose of our discussion, let us assume, for the remainder of this morning, or for the first half of today's daf, that we're talking about a woman with a vest kavua. She has a fixed cycle. Now, that means that she is expecting her cycle to begin a particular day, and that means what? It means that with this expectation, so there's a really, really strong likelihood that on that day, on that given day, so her menstrual cycle is going to begin. Now, this part gets a little bit challenging because we also have been learning since the beginning of the Masechta that a menstrual cycle is not just simply the discharge of blood, but there's a sensation that comes along with this with the first discharge of her menstrual cycle. It's what's called the hargasha. Hargasha, although the Gemara does not give actual clear terms in terms of what a hargasha is going to feel like, and obviously, meaning it'd be hard for the Gemara to communicate to us, both from a language standpoint and also, look, we're a room full of men right now, so it's just challenging. It'd be hard for the Gemara to say it, but I can at least speak about it conceptually. There's a hargasha that comes along with it, and the idea now that she has a fixed cycle and the time is coming, and right, the orich bizmano ba, we're going to see that expression coming up, right, the visitors come as it is expected to come. This idea that, and somehow it came and it went, and where to go, and was she a nida? And did she have a hargasha? Okay, with an admission that part's a little bit difficult to understand. But still, the idea is that there's what's called a vest. It's the expected time of her cycle. She has a fixed cycle. And now what? So now that means to say like this, that under the circumstance where her cycle has come, her time has come, and she did not do a bedika. So we're going to say one of a couple of things. Either we're going to say that it came, right? We don't have evidence that it came, other than the fact that she's working, she operates with a fixed cycle. And because she operates with a fixed cycle, so the expectation was that it came. She always it always comes at this interval, so therefore it came. And if it came, so that means she's an Ida. There's no evidence that she's an Ida. Vestos de Doraisa. That's one possibility. The other possibility is, no. This idea of Vestos is obviously still, it's still a pattern. In other words, we still understand it, but it's the Rabbanan. Meaning to say that if there was no actual evidence that she started menstruating, so we're going to simply say that there's a chance that she started, but we didn't have the evidence, so therefore she's not going to be Tameah. Okay, now, let's even say clear, meaning so far I just gave a abstract in terms of Vestos de Raisa, Vestos de Rabbanan. Let's say it even clearer. And I'm not going to say it clear. Rashi's going to say it clear. I'm just going to read Rashi. Rashi writes like this: Vestos de Raisa de Rabbanan, Haidekaimelan de Bai Bedika, Bishas Vesta. The idea that she requires a Bedika at the time of her vest. So what Rashi is doing over here is formulating this in a much more practical sense. And that is because of this idea of Vestos. So that means to say now that because there's an expectation of when it's coming to the day, to the hour of that day, so that means that the halacha would demand that she do a bedika at that point in time. The im lo badka temeya. And now we're going to go over the inverse, which means that if halacha demands, if the Torah demands that she has to do a bedika, well, if she doesn't do a bedika at that moment, she's going to be temeya. V'afil badka achar zman matzah satara da'orich b'zman haba. And let's say she skipped the vest. She didn't do the bedika during the vest. And she did a bedika subsequent. And the bedika came out clean. We'll simply say, look, she started menstruating. We don't have evidence. Orech bizman oba. The visitor came at its appointed time. Vidam chazai. Blood came. Vinafala karka. And it fell to the earth. In other words, you're right. We don't see it now, but it came at its time. That's if I subscribe to the idea that Vestos are Daraisa. On the other side of this says Rashi, Darabanan he, that's Rechuha, meaning in the Darabanan version of this discussion, she's still going to need to do Bedika, meaning there's an expectation that's going to come at a certain period of time, but and certainly she'll have to do Bedika, but what if she doesn't? Vim lo batka tahora. Now, if she doesn't do a Bedika at that time, she's going to be tahora. Now, it's not clear from the Rashi over here that if she doesn't do a bedika at the time and she didn't see the dam, and if I subscribe to Vestos de Rabbanan, is she going to have to do a bedika subsequently? Rashi is not clear about that point. That point happens to be open for a discussion and a debate. But right now, just on a very, very simple and straightforward level, we're just going to deal with the Rashi and look at the way Rashi is presenting it. An obvious question, Vestos d'Oraisa, this idea that Vestos is a din d'Oraisa, where in the Torah are we going to find it? So we already saw Rashi earlier in the Masechta twice, if my count is correct, say that this is halach l'moshe b'sina, meaning that the din d'Oraisa of Vestos are not going to be expressed in the Torah itself, but it's part of the oral tradition, part of the halach l'moshe b'sina.
If the Vest is d'Oraisa, why do you need the Bedika then? Because she's going to be telling anyways. So why didn't Bedika?
There's always a possibility that she could skip her cycle.
So if she did bedika, she's not tummy anymore?
Right. But only during the vest. She has to do a bedika during the vest.
No, but if the vest passes?
Then it came.
It came. No bedika is needed then.
Right. Well, no bedika is needed because it came. Okay.
Assuming that it came.
Okay. The assumption is, the Torah's assumption is that it came.
If the vest passes, she doesn't need bedika.
Right. In other words, because it came. All right. So this is a very fundamental question as to the nature of Vestos, whether Vestos are Doraisa or Vestos are Darabana. What the Gemara is going to be doing now from this point till the end of the Amud, until our Mishnah, is basically deliberate this very question. Is it a Din Doraisa or is it a Din Darabanan, with the ramifications as we just articulated within the Rashi? Let's see the remainder of this discussion. So again, I'm just going to reread the question. So we have the assemblage of Rav Huna, who said, in the name of Rav, let's say a woman has a vest, meaning she has a fixed menstrual cycle, and the time has come, and she did not do a bedika. And then, a couple days later, she starts actually seeing the discharge. So now what? So, obviously, when she actually sees the discharge, she's an Ida. That part's clear. But what about at the time of the actual vest as well? Did she start her Nidus at that point in time? So, what we're going to say is as follows. She was Anita at the vest. She's Anita when she actually sees. Well, that's an imprecise way to describe the Gemara. Choshesheth levesta and choshesheth l'riasa. We have to take into account that the Anita started at the vest. We also have to take into account, or at least the possibility, that it started now as well. What does that mean? Once again, I go back to Rashi. Choshesheth levesta v'choshesheth l'riasa im zman vesta karim me'eslaes shel riasa mitam inan taharos devesta ve'elech. Dilma bizmano ba. V'im eslaes shel riasa karim levesta. Kodem levesta, delo shasa, mishas vesta, adriasa, meisaes, azinabasa, ria, utameh meisaes. So Rashi says like this. We know that a woman, once she starts actually being anida, so retroactive 24 hours from the beginning of her anida, she is going to be mitame, anything she comes into contact with, like she, as if she were anida herself. This is what's called tameh meisaes, the topic of the first parak of our mesachta. So for this woman now who had two start points, what are her two start points? One is the actual vest. And the time, and the second one is the actual time that she sees. So now what they provide for her are two actual start points of her nida. That means that the retroactive 24 hours are going to go retroactive to both points, both the point of the vest and the point where she actually starts to see a nida. Now, if it happens to be that her seeing of her being a nida is within 24 hours of the vest, well, okay, that's fine. Meaning we're still going to say that there are two points. It just happens to be that there's overlap. Okay. So this is a statement that's attributed to Rav. Now, obviously, if we're going to go Tuma Mesa Ace from her Shas vest, even though she didn't see at the time, but she didn't do a Bedika, what does that tell you about Vestos? Vestos or Daraisa. It'd be hard-pressed to imagine that there would be a Tuma Mesa Ace on the vest where she didn't see during the vest if Vestos are only a Dindarabanan. Tuma Mesa Ace is a Dindarabanan. And if Vestos are Dindarabanan, the Chachamim would not attach a din derabanan mesa ace to a din derabanan of Vestos, if Vestos are derabanan.
The Shas Risa has to come after the vest.
Right, correct. In other words, the illustration of Ravuna over here is to make two points. One is your point, meaning that the vest by itself is enough to already assume. Again, assuming a vest is a deraisa, the vest itself is enough to assume already that she's anida, and that we're going to give it to Tumah Meisaes. That's point number one. But Ravuna is also making a supplemental point, which is that if she sees at a later point in time, that's also going to create a new mark for her in terms of the Tumah Meisaes. I could have argued, without this statement, I could have easily argued the vest is her time where she started, and this is just a continuation. Could have made that argument. And if Vestos are Daraisa, so then you, I understand the point now could have been, well, that's it, that's the beginning. Anything after that is just Hamshacha. It's just her continuation. But Rav Huna is telling us that even though Vestos are Daraisa, still the reality that she started seeing now gives us at least some indication that maybe she didn't start in the actual vest, even though Vestos are Daraisa. And that obviously, that point is a sophisticated point. It's like a, it's hard to fully process.
But in terms of practicality, the 24 hours from the vestos. So the other one, what's 24 hours before the release? I mean, unless she says she saw it 2 weeks later. I mean, but if she sees it a day later, 2 days.
Right. In other words, right, because the vest would.
The vest is already.
The vest would dictate. Right. Agreed. All right. I totally agree. So Amma vestos Daraisa. So you see from here that. That what is attributed to Rav subscribes to the idea that Vestos are Daraisa. Igad Armi now in a slightly different version of this discussion, Hachi Kamerlei. Time of Darasa. Now, over here, the example that's given is where she saw. Halo Rasa, she didn't see. Ein Choshishin. So that means to say that we're not concerned. Ama Vestos Darabanan. So that would indicate that Vestos are Darabanan. So in other words, you could really argue in one of two ways in terms of the case that he gave. He gave a case where she had a vest, and then she had a Riya, and version number one, so both of them now mark her beginning of her nida. Both of them now we're going to go back to Mameseis, so that would indicate Vestos Daraisa. On the other hand, the counter argument would be, well, no, it's only because she's Rasa. But if she didn't have a subsequent Riya, and she just skipped her vest, so that would tell us that the vest is not going to mark off her nida, and we will not say to Mameseis, which would indicate that Vestos are Durabanan. So from the statement of Rav, we do not have clarity at this point in time what is Rav's position regarding Vestos Daraisa Darabanan. Itmar. Gemara continues. Isha Sheishla Vest, Vigia Shas Vest, Velo Badka. ulevasof batka. A woman who has a vest, meaning she has a fixed cycle, and the time has come, and she didn't do a bedika, and then subsequently she did a bedika. Amarav batko masa tamea tamea, tahara tahara. So Rav says like this, if she did an examination, she discovers that she in fact is a nida, she's tamea. If she discovers she's tahara, she's tahara. And seemingly, according to Rav, the idea that she's tahara would not only be just for now, but also for the vest that she skipped, seemingly. Shmuel amar afilo batka matza tahara nami tamea mimnei sha'orach bizmano ba. And Shmuel says no. Shmuel says, look, she had a vest, she missed her vest, she did a subsequent bedika, even if nothing was produced from the subsequent bedika, nevertheless, we're going to go back to the vest and we're going to say that she's tamea going back to the time of the vest. What does that teach us? It teaches, well, lema bevestus kamiflagi. Shmuel's position is obvious and clear. Shmuel is of the opinion that vestus deraisa. Mansavar deraisa, mansavar derabanan. Or Shmuel's position is that, look, she went through her vest without having done a bedika. A subsequent bedika afterwards is going to be revelatory of, according to Shmuel, nothing. Meaning, regardless of the outcome of her subsequent bedika, at the time of the vest, we're going to assume that she started a cycle. That means that Shmuel is of the opinion that vestus are daraisa. That's clear. Rav is telling us, well, if she does a subsequent bedika, if the subsequent bedika produces a test positive that she was a nida at the time of the bedika, so that means that, okay, then she probably started at the vest. But if she comes out at the bedika being tahara, so that means that she's tahara going back to the vest as well. And seemingly that would mean that Rav is of the opinion that vestus are derabanan. So it seems to be that the machlokes between Rav and Shmuel are going to be riding on this question of whether vestus are deraisa derabanan. I'm Rabbi Zera Dekule, I'm a vestus deraisa. So Rabbi Zera says, you don't have to say that. You could say that both Rav and Shmuel are of the opinion that vestus are, in fact, deraisa. Kansha batka atzma kishir vest, kansha lo batka atzma kishir vest. And they're not even debating. They're just giving two different scenarios. If she did a bedika, now, I'll say it like this. If she did a bedika during her vest, well, that's it. Meaning, the expectation that comes at this time. But if she did a bedika at the time when she's expecting it, well, and it yields no result, so then we're going to say, look, vestus or deraisa, I know. But at the same time, she's doing a bedika during the vest. And that would clearly indicate that she skipped her cycle for whatever reason. Fine. We are going to have even a more subtle discussion, which is that she did her bedika immediately after the vest. Now, here's where the language of the Gemara is a little confusing, and hopefully I'm going to clarify. The Gemara over here talks about kishir vest. Kishir vest is talking about an interval of time of immediacy. We discussed it a couple days ago in the daf. It's a little bit complicated, or not complicated, but confusing, that the word vest over here on one hand is used to describe her cycle, and it's also talking about an interval of time. But once you realize that, so what the Gemara means now is that during her vest, meaning during her menstrual cycle where she expected her to come, she did a bedika not during, but immediately afterwards. Just like we described days earlier, the man and woman having a, where she did a bedika immediately after the tashmish. And what comes out now is as follows, that if she did a bedika immediately after her vest, bishas vest, so that means, and it comes out that there was no blood. So even though, despite the fact that we say, Oruch bezman oba, but she did a bedika. And the chiddush here is that even though she didn't do the bedika during the vest, she did it immediately afterwards, that's enough. Masha'en came where Shmuel was saying, the bedika is not going to help. He's talking about where you did the bedika with an interval of time greater than that between the vest and when she actually did the bedika. And because we say vestus adaraisa, so we're going to simply say, look, I know she did a bedika, but during the vest, she had a discharge. Where'd it go? We lost it. But she had a discharge during the vest. Okay, so right now, Rav and Shmuel are debating, but maybe not. Maybe the first way the Gemara presents it is that Rav and Shmuel are debating the issue of vestus deraisa derabanan, which you could call the simpler way to look at their machlokas, or no. Maybe they're not even arguing. They're both all vestus deraisa, and they're just describing two different scenarios. Rav Nachman, Yitzhak Amar Bevestus Gufay Kamiflagi. Rav Nachman prefers the first approach that we just gave. Within the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel, they're arguing about Vestos, whether it's Deraisa Derabanan. Mansavar Vestos Deraisa, Mansavar Vestos Derabanan. Okay, Rav Nachman prefers the first approach. Amar Rav Sheshes Kitanayim. Rav Sheshes says, this is not just a Machlokas amongst the Amoraim, it goes back to the Tanayim. Rabbi Eliezer Amar Tamei Nida, Rabbi Yeshua Amar Tibadek. What happens for the woman who skips over her vest without having done a bedika and obviously not having seen anything during the vest. So Rabbi Elazar says, Nida, meaning vestus d'oraisa. Rabbi Yoshua says she'll do a bedika, meaning she's not automatically a Nida. She'll do a bedika now. If she does a bedika now and it comes out clean, so, okay, she missed her cycle for whatever reason. Obviously subscribing to the viewpoint of vestus being d'rabanan. Okay, machlokes tanaim. V'hani tanai ki hani tanai detanya. The Gemara quotes another braisa. Rabbi Meir omer to man nida v'chacham omer to badik. Same thing. Over here in the second braisa, in the first braisa it was Rabbi Eliezer, in this braisa it's Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir takes the position of vestus d'oraisa, and the chachamim say vestus d'rabanan. Amar Abai afanan namitanina did none. And Abai says, look, it's a Mishnah. Mishnah, we already saw once earlier. We're seeing it today. We're going to see this Mishnah being quoted later in the Masechta as well. Three times we get to see this Mishnah. Rameir Omrim Haisa b'machvavi yeshas vestav lo badka tahora. Shecharada misalakes es hadam. Mishnah teaches us the following. Rachmanus, this woman is in a really precarious situation. There's some outside danger. She's hiding. She's hiding and she's panicking and she's stressed. The vest, she has a vest kavua, she has a fixed cycle, but being that the circumstances are such, she did not do a bedika. Now, under normal circumstances, although the Mishnah is not talking about normal circumstances, it certainly sounds from the Mishnah, well, that's going to be a problem. Or we'll say it even clearer. She was a Nida. However, given the circumstances of the stress and the panic that she's currently experiencing, so what happens now is that fear is going to be misalik as adam. Mm-hmm. It's going to create an abeyance of blood, and so therefore, under those circumstances, she's going to be tahara. And now the inference of the Mishnah is pretty straightforward. The Gemara spells it out. Taimadika charada. It's only because she is gripped with this fear. Haleka charada. But if she's not, tamea. She's going to be tamea. Ama vestus d'oraisa. So that Mishnah is a really strong indication that vestus d'oraisa. Lemahani tanai bahan nami pligi detanya. The Gemara says, what about this Mishnah? What the Gemara now wants to do is suggest that this Mishnah is also going to be riding on this question of Vestus d'oraisa or Vestus d'rabbanan. So far, I mean, we've already quoted two braisas and one Mishnah that clearly indicate that this question of Vestus d'oraisa d'rabbanan is a machlokis. But the Gemara would like to propose that this next Mishnah also, Haro d'amachmas maka, a woman sees blood, but it's a wound. She knows that she has an interior wound. Now, exactly where this wound is, so it's somewhere around the area of the uterus. Now, anatomically, it's going to be a little bit challenging for me to explain exactly where it is, meaning if it's just simply in the canal, well, that's not damnida. Not only is that not damnida, it doesn't pass through the uterus. We're talking about some wound internally where, in order for the blood wound to come out, it goes through the makor. It's going through the uterus. So even if it's during your main nidasa, that blood is going to be tahora. This is the opinion of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Meaning, according to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, what is this blood? It's not uterine blood. It is not her shedding her lining. It is just simply an interior wound that she has. Again, how does she know that she has such a wound? So that's a question which I'm not really qualified enough to explain or describe, but she does. I know what the assumptions are over here. She does know she has a wound. And it's now just a question of this blood that's coming out, and it happens to be going through her uterus. Is that going to be damnida? And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, no, it's not. Rabbi Omer, im yesh laves, choshesh lavesta. And Rabbi's of the opinion, well, if she has a fixed cycle, and this blood happens to be coming out during her cycle, during the expected time, so then she's going to be a nida. Now, my la ba'ak ha'miflagi. It seems now that this machlokis is going to be riding on exactly what we just described. Marsav ha'vestus d'oraisa, marsav ha'vestus d'rabbanan. This now seems to be riding on the question of vestos, d'oraisa or d'rabbanan. I'm Ravina, lo. So Ravina says, look, the other mishnayos and the other braisos, yes, they're riding on this question. This particular mishnah, not necessarily. It could be that what they're arguing about is a different issue. Kuli ama vestus d'rabbanan. It could very well be that both of these tanaim subscribe to the idea that vestus is a din d'rabbanan. V'hach b'makor makom otame kemiflagi. Over here, the issue is the question of mikor makomo tame. I will explain in just a moment. Rav Shimon Gamliel sa v'isha tahara v'dam tame dekasi derech makor. V'amalei Rebbe, I chayish levest isha nami tamea. V'ilo chayish levest mekor mekoma tahor hu. So let's start off with the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav Shimon Gamliel will say like this. Is a woman a nida? Rav Shimon Gamliel says no. No, the woman's not a nida. Again, for a woman to be a nida, it has to not only be blood, it has to specifically be uterine blood. This is not uterine blood. It happens to be blood that passes through the uterus because of a wound, but it's not uterine blood. So Rav Shimon Gamliel will take the position that she herself is not a nida. But the blood itself, the blood is tameh. Now, what we mean by that is as follows. We in our Masechta focus mostly on the woman's status when she discharges blood. Really, in our Masechta, even though this is a Masechta dedicated to the topic of Nida, really do we talk about the blood itself being a source of Tumah. But the blood itself is a source of Tumah. The dam that comes out is a source of Tumah. Much like when it comes to a man who has a discharge, the keri itself that comes out, the zera itself that comes out, is going to be a source of Tumah. And so, what the Gemara now is explaining is that according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, because the blood passes through the uterus now basically is an incubator of Tumah. And so what that uterus is going to do is it's going to take the blood that goes through her and make the blood be Tameh. As a result of that, the blood itself is Tameh. But she's not a Nida, because what yields a woman becoming a Nida? By her discharging uterine blood. This is not uterine blood. So it's a really...
In blood that became
Tumah. Right. The only thing that it is blood that becomes Tameh, but she herself is not a Nida.
But they don't have
Tumah. Okay. That's a good question. Afterwards, I'll discuss some more. Vidam Tameh Dekasa Derech Makor. And that is the opinion of Shimon Gamliel. And so it's a really interesting position in that the Makor itself, on one hand, obviously can make her Tameh by simply having the lining come out of her. The blood in that scenario is, of course, Tameh. She is Tameh. Here we're describing where it's not uterine blood. So, but according to Shimon Gamliel, the Mekor still becomes an incubator for that blood to become Tameh, despite the fact that she herself is not a Nida. Okay. And to that, Rebbe's response is, no. It's either she's a Nida or she's not a Nida, and it's really a simple binary question. And as far as the blood becoming Tameh, because that blood, that non-uterine blood, that happens to have gone through the uterus, so Rebbe fundamentally disagrees with this principle of Mekor Mekomo Tameh. In fact, he subscribes to the idea of Mekor Mekomo Tahor. The uterus is not an incubator of Tumah. And if blood, if non-uterine blood happens to go through the Mekor, nothing's going to happen to the blood. And so therefore, either she's a Nida or she's not a Nida. And it's that simple. And I'm going to read this inside again. V'amalei Rebbe, Ichaish levest isha nami tameya. Look, if we subscribe to vest, and that's an if, so then I'll say that the woman is tameya. V'ilochaish levest, but if we don't subscribe to vest, meaning vest was being daraisa, so then mekor mekomo tahor. I simply disagree with your premise that the mekor becomes is a makom tameh, making bloods that go through it a blood that which is tameh. Okay. Where do we land after having gone through the first half of today's daf? On the idea that Vestos is either going to be a Dinda Raisa or a Dinda Rabbanan. A Machlokis perhaps amongst the Amoraim, right? Machlokis between Rav and Shmuel, although even that is not clear. Could be that there was another way to explain the Machlokis between Rav and Shmuel. Certainly a Machlokis amongst the Tanaim, Rav Elazar against the Chachamim, Rabbi Meir against the Chachamim. It was a Mishnah that we saw earlier, and we're going to see later as well. The woman hiding in the cave, being gripped by fear, having skipped over a vest, having not done a bedika during her vest. There, Rav Meir says that only because of the fear that she's experiencing. We say that there is siluk damim. Otherwise, under normal circumstances, she is tameya, because Rav Meir subscribes to vestas daraisa. And possibly this last Mishnah, also going along with this machlokus, but the Gemara sidestepped, deflected that Mishnah. This last Mishnah we learned together could be resting on a different issue, mekor mekomo tameh, mekor mekomo tahor. And so, to the question of are vestas daraisa vestas darabanan, the Gemara leaves it off as a machlokus. Rishonim, most Rishonim, are of the opinion that vestas are darabanan, not daraisa. What does that mean in terms of practical halacha? It means a lot of things. But we are We're going to stay on the daf, and we're going to continue with the Mishnah.
The last Mishnah is only talking about basically one day tuma. Whether she's one day tuma because of the blood is tuma.
What if I say Vesta Star Raisa?
It's not needed tuma.
Well, I'm confused.
The last Mishnah.
She bled not because of this.
It's only talking about the one day being her being.
Oh, not she's not tamei. No,
she's not a nida. The other one said no.
Yeah,
it's
she's not
nothing at all because the uterus is not a mukam tuma.
Right. Right.
He said mukam tuma means the blood passes through becomes tuma, but not she's not that she's not a nida. She's just tuma from the blood.
Correct.
One day.
Correct. No, agreed. Agreed.
Okay.
We continue now with the next Mishnah. Beit Shammai Omrim Tzricha Beit Edim Al Kol Tashmish V'Tashmish O Tishamish L'Or Aner Beit Zillah Omrim Daya B'Shnei Edim Kol Alayla. The Mishnah over here is having a debate between Beit Shammai and Beit Zillah regarding the bedikas that's required of a woman when she is intimate with her husband. Now, again, we have to contextualize. It is really important that we do so. Meaning that the Mishnah over here is not describing where intimacy is going to demand a bedika. A woman has a cheskas tahara. We assume that she remains with a cheskas tahara. We're talking about the woman who was involved in taharos. A woman who's involved in taharos. So because now of this extra layer, level of care that she has regarding making sure that the taharos that she's working with are going to remain tahor. So as a result of that, when she has relations with her husband, she's also going to be doing a bedika as well, but it's because it's within the context of the chumrah of taharas. Just tam, a husband and wife having relations with one another is not going to demand these bedikas. Okay. Within this chumrah, Beit Shammai and Beit Zillah now are arguing the following. Husband and wife are intimate in the course of the evening, multiple occasions. Are they going to be required to do bedika every single time? That's a machlokas. Beit Shammai is of the opinion that Beis Edim, two claws are going to be needed with every tashmish. Before. Or the alternative possibility is tishamish l'or aner. Or there'll be a light there in the room so that bedika can be done against the light between every time. Now this brings us to a sensitive issue, which the Gemara obviously is not going to be scared to discuss, and that is that appropriate? Is that proper that a husband and wife should have relations l'or haner? That's coming up a little bit later on. But anyway, just in the context of our Mishnah, Beit Shammai's position is that bedika needs to be done between every tashmish. And Beit Zillah omrim daya b'shnei edim kol alayla. And Beit Zillah says, no, not necessary, meaning the bedikas are necessary, and a bedika every time is necessary, but the same bedika clause can be used and reused every time. And just to defend Beit Zillah, not that he needs my defense, but just to defend Beit Zillah, look, this bedika anyway already serves as a chumrah. It's a stringency because this woman is dealing with taharas. And so, therefore, Beit Zillah is basically saying, look, it's a chumrah to begin with. To require bedika with new claws every single time, so that is, according to Beit Zillah, too stringent. And so, therefore, Beit Zillah says that, look, I fundamentally agree bedika needs to be done, but only to the extent of a bedika needs to be done. You could use the same claws every time. Tanur Rabbanan. The Gemara quotes the following braisa. Afa bishamru. Hamishamish mitos alor aner harizimaguna. Now here in the Braisa, you see in the Mishnah, although Beit Shammai offered it as a possibility, you didn't get from the Mishnah any kind of sense that that's improper behavior. Here in the Braisa, as we are now on the top of Tezayin Amud Beis, it's very clear. The Braisa opens up with shouldn't have been done. Husband and wife should not have had relations with one another l'or haner. There should be no light in the room, and it's maguna. It's immodest behavior, but nevertheless, with that stated, so, but still, the requirement of Beit Shammai is that a bedika has to be done between every intimacy, before and after every intimacy, and so therefore, either you'll have fresh bedika clause for each one, each time, or you'll have l'or aner, even though the Braisa admits that that was improper to begin with, but at least for the bedika, it will serve a purpose.
Why does it have to be the
one
in the same room?
It
could be next room.
Okay. It's because the Braisa just wanted to make the point. But you're right. And Beit Zillah says, no, you could use the same clause the entire evening. Tanya the Gemara quotes another Braisa. Amar lem Beit Shammai le Beit Zillah devrechem lechu shema tiritipas dam kechardal. Bebi arishona. Vitecha pena shechva zera. Bebi ashniya. So here in the second Braisa, we get dialogue. Beit Shammai says to Beit Zillah, what a difficult position your position is. What's going to happen? What's going to happen is if you're reusing the same cloth, so that cloth is going to have a lot of bodily fluid on it. In other words, she's using it as her bedikah after they had relations. So it's not just going to be her bodily fluid, it'll be his bodily fluid as well. And so there's a lot of bodily fluid on that cloth. And now you're going to reuse it? And Beis Shammai says to Beis Hillel, let me ask you. It could be that there was dam. And it could just simply be that other bodily fluid is going to be covering the blood. Like what good is your bedikah if you're reusing the same cloth for multiple acts of intimacy? Amalei Beis Hillel, afla divrechem. So Beis Hillel says to Beis Shammai, look, great point. I'll counterpoint with, it's not much better according to your position. And the Gemara over here speaks in really clean language, but the Gemara means euphemistically, even with the first relations. You do bedikah after the first relations. It's not just her bodily fluid that's inside of her. It's hers and his bodily fluid. And so therefore, as much as you're bothered by my position of reusing the cloth, even on first usage after relations, could say the same thing. That his bodily fluid will be covering her bodily fluid, i.e., the blood's going to be covered. So it's not like you have a tremendous gain in your position over my position. Now, Beit Shammai's counter-argument over here is, you're right, but still, our position's better than yours. Meaning, you're right, it's certainly a possibility that they, in the first time, but at the same time, however, after the first time, it's a possibility. After the second time, the possibility gets even stronger that the Sheikh Vazer is going to cover the dam. So, truth be told, is that, yes, qualitatively, our position is better than your position. You're right, says Beit Shammai. Our position still is not perfect, but it's better. Tanya, the Gemara quotes the Braisa. I'm Rabbi Yeshua, Rahani, Yisdivri Beit Shammai. So, Rabbi Yeshua says, I hear Beit Shammai. I hear him. Amr lo tamid of Rebbe, kama ha'arecht aleinu. So, to that, the student said, really? Meaning, and you're telling us that bedikas need to be done every single time with new cloths? Amr lahem mutav she'arich aleichem ba'olam hazeh, kidei she'arichu yamechem la'olam haba. So, to which the Rebbe says to the Talmidim, okay, so I'm being a little bit machmir. That's good. So, in this world, it's going to be a little bit more inconvenient for you. That's also good. Better a little bit of inconvenience in this world and get more olam haba. Amr Rebbe Zera medivrei kulam nilmad bal nefesh lo yivol v'yishaneh. Now Rebbe Zera says, okay, lesson to be learned from all this. A bal nefesh, somebody who is particularly careful about his practice in halacha and has extra yirushamayim, a bal nefesh, so lo yivol v'yishaneh. So you shouldn't have bia and repeat it in the same evening. So Rebbe Zera says, this is lesson learned. Rava says, what? No, that's not the lesson learned. Rava amar bo v'shoneh. No, a husband can be with his wife multiple times in one evening. Kitanya hi l'taharos. So as far as the Mishnah's requirement of doing bedikas between every time, that's only contextualized in a case where she's dealing with taharos. But we're not talking about our discussion amongst the Amorayim, Reb Zera Rava, we're talking about relations between husband and wife only is for relations between husband and wife. And it does not involve taharos.
Yeah, but she's not going to deal with taharos in between.
No, totally understood. No, but the requirement to do the bedikah altogether is only because in the other parts of her day, she's dealing with taharos.
I understand that, but it seems to imply...
No, that's not the... No, it's not the implication.
In between...
I understand your point, but that's not the implication. It's just as part of the Chumrah de Rabbanan that she needs to do a bedikah, according to Beit Shammai, included in that is that she also has to do bedikah every time with fresh cloths. It's just part of the chumrah. It's not because she's dealing with taharas in between. Tanya mehachi, the Gemara quotes another brisa, bemet v'amamam l'taharas. The brisa says it very clearly, that the only time that there's this requirement of bedika is only when she's dealing with taharas. Avalabala mutaras. But if it's just with her husband, so then it would be permitted for them to have relations without having to do bedika. Uvemet v'amamam she'inicha becheskes tahara. And the brisa also makes a supplemental point. Now, we heard this before because we quoted this part of the brisa before. That's when he leaves her in a state of tahara. But let's say he left his wife while she was an ida, and he goes away for some time, and he comes back. So she has to verbalize and articulate to him that she is tahara, i.e., she went to the mikvah. The Gemara quotes a halacha in the name of Rav. Let's say she does a bedika with a cloth. Let's say she loses the cloth. So then, asur l'shamish, ad shetibadek. She can't be with her husband until she does a new bedika. The Gemara says, I have a hard time understanding this halacha. Maskav Ravila ilu isa mi lo mishamsha va'afagav de lo yada hashanami tishamish. So Rabbi Ila asks I assume it wasn't Rav who said it. It's attributed to Rav. Either way, Rav Ila says, I don't understand. Let's go back to our Mishnah. Now, in our Mishnah, according to Beis Shammai, who is the most machmer position, what happens? Husband and wife are intimate. Fine, they do bedika before and after. And they're going to do it again. And they're going to do bedika before and after. So that means now that according to Beis Shammai, she's not examining in between each time, meaning in a scenario where there's Or HaNer, so there'll be an examination. But that's not preferred. In fact, it's frowned upon. So that means to say that under normal circumstances, so the bedika clause are used and then put away, and then going to be checked the next morning. So I understood.
What's the point?
It's a chumra de rabbanan. She's not checking. She's not checking. I'm going to try to be as clear as possible. She's not checking for the chshash that she's going to be a nida. She's checking because of the chumra for taharas. Because she's dealing with taharas and making sure that they remain tahor.
We know she's not a nida for sure.
We're saying that the chazaka allows us for them to be intimate without knowing for sure, because the chazaka dictates that she's fine. As a chumra for taharos, they're required to do bedika. And from Beit Shammai's perspective, the chumra demands bedika be done each time with fresh cloths. That's it. And so what the Rav Ila's point to Rav is, wait one second. In our Mishnah, you know they didn't check the bedika cloth in between each time. They just saved it for the morning and they checked in the morning. Amalei Rav Azu Mochicha Kaim Vazu Mochicha Kaim. Rav's response is, no, I'm going to defend Rav. Rav is right. In the case of the Mishnah, so at least you have it on record. Tomorrow morning you'll check the record. Over here, if she did a bedika and she lost her cloth, so now there was an examination, we lost the test results, and now you can't just simply assume, oh, everything's fine. And consider also the following. You see, and this is where it gets really interesting. On one hand, obviously, the bedika is there to help her. And at the very same time, it can hurt her. Because, like we said, for a woman to become a nida, so that means that she is going to discharge blood with a hargasha. As we've discussed many times before, there are things that mask the hargasha. And if she's doing a bedika, an internal examination, it could very well be that the bedika itself is masking the hargasha. So, okay, fine, but that's no problem. In other words, but she has the cloth and she'll check the cloth. But if she did a bedika and she lost the cloth, so now that's a problem. Because it could be that she's a nida. Agreed. Am Rav Yochanan asur la'adam shiyishamish mitasa b'yom. Okay. And now for the remainder of today's daf, we are discussing the halachas of tznius. The modesty that a husband and wife have with one another. Obviously, there's a mitzvah in the Torah, husband and wife to be intimate. At the same time, that intimacy has to be done in the context of Kedusha. And so, what we're going to be discussing for the rest of today's daf is this idea of tznius even during intimacy. Amar Rav Yochanan asur la'adam l'shamish mitasa b'yom. It's prohibited for a man to have relations with his wife during the day. My crush in Emar. And there are psukim that support this as well. Pasuk ani of yovad yom ivaleid bo v'halayla amar horegavar. Iov, after losing everything, family, money, so he curses the day that he died, the day that he was born, and he curses the night in which he was conceived. Okay. He's not happy. So the you're right. He's just not happy. So what do we see from this pasuk in Iyuv? As he is now bemoaning his life, he says, and I'm cursing the night in which I was conceived. Laila nitein leherayon, v'yom lo nitein leherayon. So incidentally, we see over here, in other words, for him it was a davar pasha. That conception occurs during night, meaning relations are had during night.
Why don't they cite the story of Rivka and Yitzhak and Abimelech, looking into them during the day?
Right. So it could just simply be that they were not engaged in intimacy. It could just simply be that they were playing with one another. They were just being they were touching one another like a husband and wife would, but not intimacy. Reish Lakish Amar Mehacha Bozed Rechav Yamos. So a person who is mivazeh, he degrades Derechav. In this context, we're understanding the pasuk of Mishlei to mean intimacy between husband and wife. So such an individual, yamos, he should die. Strong language, but the Gemara's understanding is that the man who has relations with his wife during the day is really improper behavior. It's a bizayon. It's degrading behavior. Reish Lakish, I cried to Rav Yochanan, my Darish Bey. So now, what does each Amora do? The Amorim agree with one another. Parenthetically, there could very well be subtle differences between these two positions in terms of which pasuk you get it from, but from the basic standpoint, they're agreeing with one another, and it's now just a question of which pasuk do I use? And if I'm using one pasuk, what do I do with the other pasuk? Classic Gemara discussion. So, v'haikra de Rav Yochanan, my darish bey. What is Reish Lakish going to do with Rav Yochanan's pasuk? The pasuk in Iyov is telling us that there is a malach who is appointed and in charge of herayon, of conception. Now it's interesting because we have other gemaras that tell us that the mafteach, the key for fertilization, that's held directly by a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So it requires a little more sophistication to understand how all this works, and I'm not the one who understands. But I could say over our gemara. Our gemara teaches us that the malach in charge of herayon, his name is Laila, v'noto tipa u'ma'amid l'fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it takes the preformed human, otherwise known as the semen of the man, puts it in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, v'omer, l'fan ribon sholam tipa zemate aleha. So, Kadosh Baruch Hu, so let us now set a course for this person's life. Gibor or chalash, strong or weak, chacham or tipe, smart or not smart, ashir or ani, wealthy or poor, v'ilu resho or tzadik lo kamar. So the Gemara says, now look, so what's given to you in life physically, that all comes from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That is not up to you. Okay? And I know it's such a sensitive topic, but Kadosh Baruch Hu decided that I'm not going to get the verticals. Okay, it's going to happen. But the Gemara says, but you know what's not up to Kadosh Baruch Hu, but strictly depends upon us, Tzadik or Rasha. Everything's up to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Our entire circumstances, all of our physical attributes, that's all up to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Yerushamayim, that's us. What we call Bechir Chavshis. Kadosh Baruch Hu is asking from you for Yir Shamayim. Meaning, of course he's asking it from us because it is up to us. Rav Yochanan, im kei nechtokra, gever hora. My hora gever, Laila. I'm sorry, my hora gever, Laila, nitan l'arayon, v'yom lo nitan l'arayon. Rav Yochanan's counterpoint is that, I agree with you, but just structurally, from a syntax standpoint, since the pasuk says, Horegever, so that means to say that conception should occur primarily during the night. Meaning, I agree with your point as well, but also just from the structure of the pasuk, my point also is derived from the pasuk. Rav Yochanan, haikra de Reish Lakish, my darish bey. So the Gemara says, now what is Reish Lakish going to do with Rav Yochanan's pasuk? So, mi baile lechidichsiv b'sefer ben sira. Well, he uses that pasuk in Mishlei to corroborate something that was taught to us by ben sira. Ben sira, it's a sefer, but not one of the Sifrei Tanakh, written during the same period of time, simply did not make it into the canon. A non-canonized sefer known as Ben Sira. Should we be reading Ben Sira? Should we not be reading Ben Sira? Well, I'm going to make an admission, and I'm going to go on record with it. I didn't read it. But okay, so so for me, the question becomes almost a philosophical one. I still got a lot to go before I get to Ben Sira. I'll work on the required reading first, and then I'll deal with the question. But anyway, and tomorrow we get to learn a little bit more about Ben Sira. Really interesting, Gemara. Please come back again tomorrow. Anyway, so lichdichtiv b'sefer Ben Sira shlosha sanesi va'arba lo ahavti. Three people I hate, meaning this is really strong language, and a fourth person not particularly fond of. So Sar Hanargo beveis hamishtaos va'amrilei Sar Hanargan. So you have a tamachacham. Sar over here is a reference to a tamachacham that either goes to the bar frequently. That's the hanirgal, right from ragil. So he visits the bar frequently. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, visiting the bar in general, right? Nothing good comes from that. A tamachacham going there. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I really do not like such an individual. Or the other way to say it is hanargan. And Rashi describes it as someone who just simply talks too much. Hamoshiv. Right. The Amrila. Right. There is one more. Right. And Rashi has the girsa. Right. The Amrila sar hanirgaz. Thank you. Rashi says somebody who behaves in a drunken manner on a regular occasion. That's one. Two, Hamoshiv Shabbos Memorah Mekoras. Somebody who comes off as being really arrogant. Basically cast that arrogance on others. And Ha'ochiz Ba'ama U'mashimayim. Someone who holds on to himself while urinating, which we already discussed earlier in the Masechta. V'hanichnas lebeis chavero pit'om. And somebody walks into another person's house unexpectedly, unannounced, without knocking. I'm Rav Yochanan v'afilu lebeiso. And Rav Yochanan says, I want to amplify that point. Not only when walking into somebody else's house, unannounced, and without any warning, even walking into your own home. It is not preferred behavior to walk into your own home without first knocking on the door. Okay. Adkan, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow, we start from the bottom of the Amud.